everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. This Kansas Moms case, as we've been calling it, it seems that every day there's something more interesting occurring in this case. And I never want to forget that this is all about these two people you see on the screen, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, and may they rest in peace. But to make them rest in peace and to give their families peace, this case has to be seen through, and justice must be given to these two murdered moms from Kansas, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. Now, some of the things that have been happening, we here at Police Off the Cuff predicted these things way before the press did. In fact, we were on them. In fact, Mike Geary predicted that the weak link in this case would be Cora Twombly. And that was, of course, before Paul Grice got arrested, came forward, and apparently gave a full confession. So in this little thumbnail here, to the right is Cora Twombly. Now, Mike Geary, very early on, when the arrest first happens, he said she would be the weak link in the case, and she would flip and turn state's evidence. When you have now five people, we initially had four. When you have five people, here's the first four. Remember we spoke about this, what defenses might the suspects raise in the Kansas Moms case? And the defenses are very tough to think about. When up on the top slide where Tiffany Adams is, motive, overt acts, premeditation, all of those things exist in this case. So then who's going to flip? Who's going to cut themselves a deal? And what we would always say is the first person to flip gets the best deal. And I'm sure that's the way it is, except things changed, didn't they? When the first four were arrested, we were told that Tiffany Adams confessed. And now all the news reports are that, oh, we don't know if she did. They just don't know what's in that confession. They were told by law enforcement that she confessed, that she gave information, that she admitted to it. That's what's called a confession. How deep and how in-depth and how much information, how they compared that confession with the evidence they had, we don't know. But we were told that she confessed. And now, lo and behold, we have this. Who's cutting a deal? Will the Oklahoma murdered moms defendants turn on each other? I'm sure that's already happened. I'm sure they've already turned on each other, because you've heard the old expression, there's no honor among thieves. And think of this. Here's five individuals that committed a heinous crime, murder in the first degree, kidnapping in the first degree, conspiracy to commit murder, death penalty case. All five of them could get the death penalty. So you think all five of them are going to take it on a chin and be stand-up guys? Did they take a vow of omerta like the mafia does? And then the mafia has that vow of omerta and they still rat on each other, right? Everyone in this case, everyone involved is going to look out for numero uno. They're going to look out for themselves. And they're going to try to cut a deal for themselves. They're not going to care. They're not going to care about the other person. They're not going to care about the crime. They're going to lessen their involvement in it with their confessions. And that goes for Tiffany Adams and of course, Paul Grace, and then all these other folks that are sitting in jail waiting their next court appearance, they're running to their lawyers right now. What can you do for me? How can you get me out of this? Can you get me out of the death penalty? So I've seen this before, and it's so, so predictable. So guys, hold on to your hats. Get ready to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, and you're about to enter the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped at 10th and Grant's bike by there.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger. So, you know, all of the news stations are reporting that there he is up on the screen, Paul Grice, and over his head in red and black is who's cutting a deal. Well, don't forget, he was initially brought in when all five of them were brought in and he was let go. So we have to think that at that point, they didn't have enough evidence to hold him. At least didn't have enough evidence of his involvement. And did perhaps Tiffany Adams' confession bring enough evidence to the table to bring Paul Grice in? And then what does Paul Grice do? He immediately starts singing like a parakeet, a beautiful song of confession, implicating everyone else, including himself. He put himself in there. But when someone confesses like that, turns state's evidence, as we would say, maybe the prosecutor will give him consideration and not have him subjected to the death penalty. Could the other four still get it? He could still get it too. Maybe the prosecutor doesn't want to cut any deals. And maybe when someone else comes forward to get their little day in court, to get their little deal, the prosecutor may say, I don't need you. I don't need you to tell me what happened. I already know what happened. I have Paul Grice's confession. I have Granny's confession. So guess what? I don't need your confession. What I care about right now is the families of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. That's what I care about. I care about getting justice for them. So the little deal you want right now, you can tell me what happened if you think that'll make you feel better. And right now, because you're in custody and you have an attorney, we can't talk unless you do it with your attorney. And I'm not promising your attorney or you any deal. There's no deal being promised. So yeah, if you want to tell me your story, maybe I'll consider not going for the death penalty in your case. And could the state decide not to go for the death penalty, period? Yeah, they could decide that. And here we have criminals in the same family, right? Cole Earl Twombly and Cora Twombly, husband and wife. And let's not forget, we spoke about God's misfits. And here they all are, God's misfits. And we spoke about it last night. What was the part? What was God's misfits' role in this? Did it have a role? Was Tiffany Adams controlling any these people? Did she have powers over these people? Was it some sort of mind control at their weekly meetings that they spoke anti-government stuff? And then we here we have ZZ Top here, Tad Cullum with his long beard there. I don't mean to disparage ZZ Top to say that he's a member. He's not, but that's just that I was trying to be funny with the long beard here. And then we look when this first happened, poor arrest in connection with the missing Kansas moms. And then we find out all the horrific things and the recovery of the bodies and that. News Nation spoke about this today. Could the Oklahoma murdered moms defendants turn on each other? And as I said, we spoke about that about a week ago, myself and Mike Geary. Let's see what News Nation has to say about this. This is a little pretty eloquent.
Is back to the drawing board for God's misfits. Grandma Tiffany Adams, her boyfriend Tad Cullum, and Cole and Corey Twombly might need to rethink their defense strategy now that one of the other group members has seemingly confessed to everything. Yes, it was announced yesterday that Paul Grice, a fifth suspect in the murders of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, was arrested, and he's talking. According to the arrest affidavit, Grice was interviewed and admitted that he was part of the planning and killing of both Butler and Kelly. Grice admitted that he participated in the killing of Butler and Kelly and their subsequent burial. All five of the suspects face the same charges, 2 counts of murder in the first degree, 2 counts of kidnapping, 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree, all of them felonies. Not easy to wriggle out from under those, but is there anything that Grandma Tiffany's gang of, five, can say or do to get the death penalty off the table? Anything where they could walk free? Well, I'm joined right now by trial attorney Dante Mills, who I have given the impossible task of trying to answer that question. Dante, good to see you. Here's where I struggle. First, let's talk about the first degree murder. Can they get past it? We both know that it's not just intent. There's a thing called felony murder, right? So if someone dies during the commission of a kidnapping, they could still be convicted of murder. They didn't even have to intend to kill him. How did they get past first-degree murder?
Well, nothing is impossible, right? We'll start with that, except maybe this. When you have somebody that's talking, that's always the issue, and officers know that. When investigators show up, they arrest you, the first thing they do, they read you their rights, and then they ask you, do you want to help yourself, right? And they give you the opportunity to talk because they know how important it is. If you start going into details about the crime, that kind of locks you in and provides them all the evidence they need, and that may be what happened here.
What would a deal look like? I mean, if they're all involved in this heinous crime, would it be, hey, you give us what we need, you testify against the other bunch, we'll take the death penalty off the table? Because I can't imagine it's anything lower than life in prison or the death penalty. It's not like they're going to get 10 years for this if you cooperate.
Well, maybe, because here's the thing. Like you said, if this was a gruesome crime.
Yeah.
If they committed this crime and if they planned it, then they may get the death penalty. This is a case that the prosecution, the investigators are.
You know, there's something that in a prosecution, having the death penalty in a state, we don't have it in New York State any longer. We used to have it. It's a negotiating tool. So to get these defendants to try to get them to cooperate, to get them to make statements, you have that to hang over their head. You have the death penalty. So a state that doesn't have the death penalty, they don't have that leverage, but now they have this leverage. So would it upset the people of the state of Oklahoma if these five individuals you see on the screen, heinous crime they committed, here's the four of them, and then we, of course, added Paul Grice, and there's number five. Would it terribly upset the people of the state of Oklahoma if they all got life in prison without parole? Or does the state of Oklahoma and the families of these poor victims, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, do the families want the death penalty? I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that it's good for a prosecutor to have that as leverage against these defendants. And so far, two out of the five have made statements. Two out of the five. Lori Daniel Nancy Grace said the mother of the girl with the red hair just buried her grandchild and then found out her daughter was dead. She buried her daughter. My prayers go out to them all. Yeah, I agree. That's it. Some people, sometimes in life, some unfair things happen to people when horrific things happen right on top of each other. It's just terrible. Trisha Rod, their dumb anti-government rhetoric has put them behind iron bars. How's that working out? Yeah, it's not working out, is it? Not at all. There were some rumors that Paul couldn't be pounded after his first interview. Pessa, I think that was just that, rumors. I think he was around. I think they let him go because they didn't have necessary probable cause. But now they brought him back in, and lo and behold, he's confessed. He's confessed, and it makes the whole case a lot easier for everyone. Pessa again, and supposedly Tiffany hired Tim McVeigh's lawyer to fight for the kids. That's weird. He does family law too. I guess he does everything. If you can pay him, he'll do it, right? If you have the money, an attorney will rise to the occasion. Sharon Lane, Oklahoma is very pro on the death penalty. Maybe so, but let's not forget the death penalty. It takes endless years and years to mete out the death penalty as a penalty, because there'll be at least 20 to 25 to 30 years of appeals before the first person will ever be put to death, if it ever happens. And also, this is a, as you say, a death penalty state. And I don't know when the last time was that Oklahoma carried out a death penalty, but we shall see. Lori Daniel, that's who it was. Veronica Butler's mom just buried a grandchild and then found out about her daughter. Her kids told her not to drive home. My heart breaks all these families. Yes, it's absolutely horrific. Let me get back to the News Nation reporter here.
They're going to want hemmed up and sewn together completely. Their only way to do that, because you do have to show planning. Otherwise, this is a situation where people were...
Do you need to show planning? You need to show intent to kill. You need to show deliberation. I mean, isn't it enough that the phone, these burner phones that they allegedly bought, tracked to the car that was abandoned by the victims, that the search history for Miss Adams showed stun gun purchases or burner phones? You have a teenage witness. One of the teenage daughters, is one of the biggest witnesses saying, yeah, they basically confessed. I mean, do you even need the testimony of any of them?
You do, because here's the thing. Investigators can know what happened because they're good investigators, but you still have to put that information in front of the jury. So it's one thing if you want to piece that together with an investigator coming and saying, hey, we have this phone showing this and that. It's much different and much easier if you have a witness coming and saying, I was a part of it. I can tell you firsthand that I was in that room when we decided that we were going to kill this person.
We spoke about this the other night, that the planning, the meetings, in the arrest affidavit, they talk about the planning and, you know, the buying of the, I can put it up on the screen, I think, the buying of the stun guns, the planning. There was a great deal of planning to this case. You know, I'll put that up on the screen. I don't know if it's big enough for everyone to see. I'll make it bigger. On April 1st, 2024, OSBI agents obtained a search warrant for Tiffany Adams' cellular phone. OSBI agents performed an extraction on the device. Information gained from the device included web searches for taser pain level, gun shops, prepaid cellular phones, and how to get someone out of their house. Premeditation, as Mike Geary would say, consciousness of guilt. I'll put that a little bit bigger. On April 3rd, 2024, OSBI interviewed, she's referred to as the complainant witness, age 16. We know that she's the daughter of Cora Twombly and Kobe White. That's her biological father. Cole Twombly is her stepfather. Cora's married to Cole Twombly. Complainant witness stated that she overheard group conversations related to Butler not protecting her children from her brother, all in reference to an SA allegation. Complainant witness advised that she was told by Cora that Adams, Cullum, Cora, Cole, and Paul Grice, his name was listed this early, were involved in the deaths of Butler and Kelly. She stated that Adams had provided burner phones to use so they could communicate without using their personal devices. Complainant witness saw two burner phones charging on Cora's nightstand in her bedroom. That's pretty damning evidence. Complainant witness described Cora, Cole Adams, Cullen, Paul Grice as being part of an anti-government group that had a religious affiliation. Through OSBI investigation, it was learned that they call their group God's Misfits. Regular meetings are held weekly at Twombly's in the home of Barrett and Lacey Cook. The complainant witness was told on March 29th, 2024, that Cora and Cole would not be home in the morning when she woke, and they were going to be on a mission. When the complainant witness awoke at approximately 1000 hours, Cora and Cole were not home, but came home around 1200 hours. Complainant witness knew that Cole and Cora took a blue and gray Chevrolet pickup owned by them and a blue flatbed pickup owned by Clint Twombly when they left and returned in the same vehicles. Complainant witness was told to clean the interior of the Chevrolet pickup. Complainant witness asked Cora what had happened and was told that things did not go as planned, but that they would not have to worry about her, Butler, again. Complainant witness was told that Cora and Cole blocked the road to stop Butler and Kelly and divert them to where Adams, Cullum, and Grice were. Complainant witness asked about Kelly and why she had to die, and was told by Cora that she wasn't innocent either, as she had supported Butler. Complainant witness asked Cora if their bodies were put in a well, and Cora replied, something like that. Complainant witness also disclosed that other attempts to kill Butler occurred during February of 2024. That is pretty damn solid evidence right there, right? An eyeball witness, besides the fact, well, an eyeball in eyeballing evidence, not an eyeball in regards to witnessing the crime. But that is pretty damn solid evidence. And a 16-year-old that sees and is told by one of the participants in this crime what had occurred, that's pretty damn powerful, isn't it? And then add into that they're part of this anti-government group, God's Misfits. It just puts the whole case together. It puts everything together.
And ultimately, these two people. You want me to throw a little curveball at you? Self-defense. You might be saying, what are you talking about here? I'm not. Because here's the idea, right? We know that a pistol magazine was found in the handbag of Jillian Kelly. You might be saying they bought stun guns. They didn't buy knives. They didn't buy handguns, as far as we know yet, right? Maybe they came to abduct them. Maybe they came to have a talk with them. But they didn't go to kill them. And perhaps Jillian Kelly started it, and they defended themselves. It's hard for me to even say. Is that a real defense?
It is a real defense, and I'll tell you why. One, it came out today that there were no gunshot wounds. That's right. Initially how
we don't know the cause of death, though.
We don't know the cause of death, but there were no gunshot wounds. That means you would imagine.
You know, I just want to say something. There's some there's some content creators. There's some people that do what I do here, and if I can't confirm something, I'm not going to make it up what coulda, woulda, shoulda, you know, because especially in the cause of death, which none of us know right now, they're telling us what it wasn't, that it wasn't a gunshot wound. They're not telling us what caused the death. And then I saw some content created today talking about them being buried alive. This content creator doesn't know that. So why is she reporting it? The dramatic effect of that, the horror of that, she's reporting that potentially they were buried alive. I don't like that, you know. I don't like when people do that. I don't think the families would like that, that's how it was being reported. Pessa from the chat, I'm just really curious how the information was gathered from the girl. Did she go to them? Did they come into the house wanting to interview her mom and stepdad? Pessa, that's a good question, and we don't know the answer to that yet. But apparently when Cole and Cora Twombly came home and saw that their daughter was being interviewed by police, they were not happy. They obviously were not happy and they tried to stop it, but it was too late to stop it. So interesting. Sharon Lane. Yep, that's what NG said. She doesn't know that. Yeah, Sharon, that's who I was referring to without saying her name. I don't like that. But she does that all the time, too, with every type of sensational. Make it sensational. That seems to be her MO. Annette Hall, I heard she went to a teacher who got the police and brother involved. You know, Annette, we don't know that, but thank you for your for filling us in on that. It's not confirmed. Sharon Lane, Tiffany is evil, but I bet she doesn't want the death penalty. She might plead insanity. I don't know if that's not a viable defense in this case, because she once something is planned and a lot of forethought goes in it, the chance of getting an insanity plea are slim and almost none. So, folks, this is Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right location. And if you're not subscribed to us, what are you waiting for? Go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button. It's free. Give us a thumbs up. Ring that bell. Hit the like button. Share us with your friends and your family. Send it overseas. Send it all over the damn world. Send it to other galaxies. Get some Martians to tune into us. I think they'll like the show. If you want to contribute to us financially, we have a Patreon with three different levels, and we also have a YouTube channel membership with count and five different levels. And we really appreciate our channel is growing, all our new friends and our family members here supporting this show. And again, we give it to you from a police perspective, from folks like myself, Mike Geary, Phil Grimaldi, even though he's been AOL for a while, I expect him to be coming back soon. We did this job. I worked in homicide for 10 years and investigated every other crime known to mankind. In my 16 years in the NYPD Detective Bureau as a boss, as they say, I was a sergeant. So, you know, in the NYPD, when you're above the rank of sergeant, people call you boss. And that's how they say it with that New York accent. Hey, boss, you know. So 16 years investigating all kinds of different crimes. So we have a pretty good perspective and a pretty good sense of what's going on. Let me go back to they're talking about, could any of them use a self-defense defense in this case? It seems far-fetched, but Jillian Kelly had a magazine inside her purse, and she was known to carry a pistol. So is it possible that they disarmed her and they're going to use that and say, oh, she tried to shoot at us? That's a possibility. Not that believable, but it's a possibility. Let's go back to this.
Presumably, they didn't bring guns to kill. Doesn't mean they didn't bring anything else, but they didn't. This was also a dispute from both sides, where both sides had words, both sides had exchanges. And you can say, well, we were going to meet her. Yes, we were mad at her, but we were going to curse her out. We were going to, you know, really be angry with her. She pulled out a gun and we had to defend ourselves. That's why the planning and having somebody who was in on the planning is so important, because it takes away that defense.
Real quick, 15 seconds. Do you see a scenario where they're not all convicted or they're not all acquitted, but some are convicted and some are acquitted?
I see a scenario where one person spills the beans and gets a lighter sentence, and then everybody else either does life in jail or gets the death penalty.
Impossible task. I think we'll start with that. Dante Mills, good seeing you.
So, you know, I thought that was a pretty damn good report by News Nation. It was given lightly, not so dramatic as many times. It's News Nation could be very dramatic, but we discussed that. And I'm not going to say, we said it first. But we did discuss that on our show, that who's going to flip first. Legal-minded friends, Karen Cole, thank you. Oh, it looks like Michael DeWayne Smith was executed on 4th of April, 2024 by lethal injection, according to Channel 2 News. Karen Cole, we had asked before, when did Oklahoma last use the death penalty in their state? Here's the answer. April 4th, very recently. Very, very recently. Karen, thank you so much for doing that. Roseanne, I agree with you, Sergeant Bill. Don't report until things are confirmed. Yeah, I think that's... Look, you guys have all been with us as we followed the Madeline Soto case. And just the other day, a couple of days ago, Stephon Stearns has been officially charged with murder in the second degree, in the first degree in that case. Again, we still don't know the cause of death. Now, people want to know what people are conjecturing, but you can't make it up. You got to get that from a competent. You got to get it from a competent source. In the case of Madeline Soto, from the medical examiner. But in the state of Florida, apparently, if a victim is under a certain age, the state will not release the autopsy. So when we will find out the cause of death in that case is not known. It's really not known. Banfield and the whole News Nation has been reporting on this. Heather, thank you so much. Happy Friday. Pumpkins, I like that. Thank you for the $1.99 super sticker from Heather. Good to see you, Heather. Moonlight View and Supreme Commander. You know, guys, I just saw some of the folks in the chat. I used to do a show also on the same channel, Police Off the Cuff. I used to do a show called Coffee with Cannon. And I would do it in the daytime, and I would sometimes do it outside in my yard. And I would use a gimbal instead of a computer, so I was really actually shooting it on my phone. And I want to start doing that show again because it's a little bit lighter. And I don't have to do true crime. I can do whatever I want on that show. But I was doing it on the same channel as Police Off the Cuff. So it got a little bit confusing. So I'm hoping sometime in May or June to bring back Coffee with Cannon. But its own channel. No, I don't want to do it on the Police Off the Cuff channel. So all you former fans, friends of Police Off the Cuff, of Coffee with Cannon, I'm hoping to come back and do it again. We'll see. I've cried wolf once before and I didn't do it. So Kansas 66, I live in ranching country. Cement left above ground could be left to stop erosion. What tree stump? Treeless land, pasture rent runs April, October. Defendants way stupider than they think. Well, Fuzzy Doxy, good to see everyone subscribe. It's free, and I want Bill to get to 100,000 subscribers. I want to get there too. I'm moving. I'm growing, not as quickly as I would like to, but it's up to you guys and your friends and family to get me up there, and I appreciate it. Cynthia Martin, how can they claim Jillian was aggressive with the gun when all five, instead of Adams, cornered them outside miles from agreed location? Cynthia, it's just the potential that they could raise that as a defense. I don't think it's believable. I don't think a jury will believe it's believable, but it's just conjecture that they could raise that as a defense. It's very possible they could. Lawson's mom, I loved Coffee with Bill. It was actually Coffee with Cannon, but Lawson's mom, thank you. We had some fun. We had some laughs doing that show, right? And BB2, Sergeant Bill, we would hear the COD at the trial if Stearns doesn't confess. And BB2, I believe you would. I believe that might be the one we'll find out. And the paperwork should come out before that in discovery. And so we would find out, I believe, And BB2, yes, excited for you to do Coffee with Cannon. I've certainly missed it. See, I had some diehard fans for Coffee with Cannon. And legal-minded friends, Karen Cole, songs were great on Coffee with Cannon. I used to sing songs every once in a while. Not on Police Off the Cuff, because this is much more serious than Coffee with Cannon is or was. Naomi McFarlane, look at all the people that actually watched Coffee with Cannon. I love Coffee with Cannon. I also love your show Off the Cuff. Thank you so much, Naomi. Very nice. Moonlight View, we miss your singing, Bill. Well, I actually sang Blackbird at my son's wedding, which was March 2nd. And it was just for a quick, this was my son's wedding. He's the one in the middle. That's my son, Jake. And the man all the way to the left is my son, Casey. And I'm all the way to the right. And my son, Casey, and myself, those are Armani tuxedos. And that's the only time I ever wore an Armani tuxedo in my life. Maybe the first and last time, you know. But anyway, that was fun. That was my son Jake's wedding. And it comes and goes. Life's big events, they come and go real quickly, you know. So you got to enjoy it. You got to enjoy it where you can. Nina Shandro, hi at Police Off the Cuff. Loves Coffee with Ken. Nina, thank you. So good to see you here. Sherilyn, I you know, I saw you, Sherilyn, and BB Tools. But Sherilyn, it's nice to see you here too. I'm seeing some folks from that used to watch, and they're back, and I'm glad people are back. I want to play a little bit of Ashley Banfield talking about the fifth suspect arrested in this case. That, of course, is Paul Grice, and what that means to this case.
Far more clear with Paul Grice. Police say his confession, it is black and white, and it lines up with all the details that the Twombly's 16-year-old daughter told investigators weeks ago about the planning, about the murders, about the burial. She said Grice was a part of everything, start to finish. According to a friend of Paul Grice's, Paul was initially detained and questioned by investigators weeks and weeks ago, but for some reason, they let him go. And then recently we learned this about his anti-government views. Almost exactly 1 year ago, he filed this crazy 44-page document that reads like a Kaczynski manifesto against the USA, renouncing his US citizenship. But no matter what he believes, US laws apply to Mr. Paul Grice, especially when it comes to murder. The sheriff tells us he's going to be arraigned week from today, 9 a.m. So mark your calendar. News Nation's senior national correspondent Brian Enten is back with me now. So talk to me about this confession, because we heard about Grandma Tiffany's confession. It sounded more like we weren't sure. It was she indicated her responsibility. This is entirely different.
Yeah, this was much, much clearer, Ashley. We know that investigators were out at Paul Grice's house yesterday, and he lives not very far from where the bodies were discovered, by the way. He rents a property right in that area. They went out to talk to him yesterday. What led them to actually go out again to talk to him, we don't know, but there was this confession, and I want to read it to you because it was much, much more specific and clear than what we saw with the recorded statement from Grandma Tiffany. The confession reads, according to the affidavit, Grice was interviewed and admitted that he was a part of the planning and killing of both Butler and Kelly. Grice admitted that he participated in the killing of Butler and Kelly and their subsequent burial. So they are saying that not only was he connected to the planning, to the actual killing, but then also the burial. And you remember we were out in that area where the bodies were buried 10 feet down. It's an area that Paul Grice knows well. Everybody knows each other in that area. And again, the land that he rents where he lives with his family is very, very close to that spot.
Doesn't get more clear than that. Planning, murder, and burial, police say he's confessing to. It just makes me wonder, is he desperate to give them everything on the other four to try to save his head? This is a death penalty state. And so if he's got a good lawyer, the lawyer will say, run to the well first and maybe you'll get a good drink and the rest of them will go thirsty. So the other detail that you learned today, you know.
You know, that sort of made me laugh. Did she just like come up with that, or was she rehearsing that? Maybe you go to the well first, maybe you'll get a drink and the other four will go thirsty. Come on, that wasn't on the tip of her tongue. That had to have been rehearsed, right? So if Paul Grice, you know, came forward and confessed, yeah, is he looking to cut a deal? Yeah, but maybe the deal is just to save his own life. It's not, he's not going to get off. If he took part in the murders, and he did, Veronica Butler, Butler and Jillian Kelly, he's not getting a deal cut. His deal may be that they spare his life. He's not going to walk. He's not going to go free. Just think of that. This guy threw away his whole life. And apparently he has three kids. He's early 30s. He's early 30s. Threw away his whole life. What made him do that? What made him throw his whole life away to help grandma here, Tiffany Adams, murder her, basically, it's sort of her daughter-in-law, even though it's not that she's not married, but she's the mother of her grandchildren. So what made these guys partake in this? What made them kill these two women? And Jillian Kelly, really, other than being the escort to the, for the exchange of the in the custody, she had nothing to do with this. She had nothing to do with this, and she lost her life. So what were these people thinking of? That's why I question in this whole God's Misfits thing. Were they mind controlled? You know, here's the four of them. Did Tiffany Adams have some kind of control over them that she was able to get them to do what she wanted them, what she wanted them to do, which included murder? Here's a, you know, this guy, Cole Twombly, he always has that dumb look on his face. What is so funny? Dude, you're facing the death penalty. Look at his dumb-looking face on screen here. Like, what is that smirk? Where's that coming from? Like, do you realize the situation you're in right now? Get that dopey-looking look, that look on your face. There he is there. Is the same dopey look on his face, and here too. Well, here he's just happier times, I guess. But in the picture here, there he's just they got a smirk, sort of, you know. Let me go to the chat. Yeah, that Myra Buchanan, yeah, that shit-eating grin, yeah. Exeter Line, 1930. Does anyone know what business Tiffany engaged in at her property? It's been said Tiffany had business with townspeople. What business did they engage in? Exeter Line, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if anyone in the chat does. Julia Ann, police off the cuff. Every girl crazy about a sharp-dressed man. I see three sharp-dressed men. Great pick. That's right out of a ZZ Top tune. I guess you're a fan of ZZ Top. Yes, you know, I put this other picture up on the screen. I think it was last night or the night before. And this is a crazy picture right here. And that's me in the middle there. It was 2008 in Times Square. It was New Year's Eve, and I was in charge of the investigative detail for New Year's Eve in Times Square in 2008. And those are the five detectives that were with me. And it was a freezing, freezing cold night. But I'm glad we took that picture because, you know, till I don't know what year it was where all the iPhones and all that came out, but we didn't routinely carry digital cameras around with us. But I wish I did have a digital camera. You know, just to get off topic for 1 second, I'm a 9/11 first responder. And again, that happened 2001, September 11, 2001. And we had phones. We didn't have the cameras on our phones. And I felt that it was like disrespectful to take pictures that day. So I never took a picture that day. And I always, now I wish I had that. I just at least took a picture of myself and the three detectives that were with me, because it would have meant a lot to me to have that picture. You know, not only did we respond, but we survived that day. And I could tell you the names of the detectives I was with, Detective Billy Hicks, Detective Zedekiah Jennings and Detective James Zarakis and myself, who responded to 9/11 from the 2-3 squad. And as I said, I know it's off topic right now. I just got on this topic for a quick second, and I wish that I had pictures from that day. Roseanne, in my opinion, many of these news reporters are becoming sensationalistic. Banfield, Vinny Cupmo, Nancy G, Brian E is one of the few that is staying grounded. I think Brian Enten's great. I really like him a lot. I think he's a very likable guy besides being a consummate professional. He's always the guy that gets the biggest story for News Nation. Odin's Dotia, I hope I pronounced your last name right. Grice has two young children at home, plus one in Alaska with his ex. So in their maniacal fervor to follow Granny Adams to hell, even more babies are without one or more parents. Shaking my head at these people. Odin's, you're 100% correct. What were they thinking, right? What were they thinking? Heather, he was smiling like that on the way into court. So creepy. Sherry Peng from the chat. Rumor was Granny had $9 million. Probably nervous, embarrassed people do that. I don't know if, well, you know, we don't have any verification of that. Victoria's Secret, using religion, fear, and money is the easiest way to control other people. Which one was it in this case? I don't know. But hatred. There was hatred in this. She hated her daughter-in-law, Veronica Butler. She despised her, that she got people to do her bidding. Legal-minded friends, Karen Cole. I think Tiffany Evil grandmother was on school board as well. Yeah, I had heard that also. Nina Shandro, very nice pick, Sergeant Cannon. Thank you. Cheryl and Schaff, that is a loaded question. I've heard that Twombly's often had no power in their home. TA was a resource. Money is a strange bedfellow. Sherilyn, you're 100% right. People use money to control others. That's for sure, you know. And that's very sad. Kathy Sue, that's quite a tie, Sergeant Bill. That's one of those Jerry Garcia ties. You know, Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead? That's one of those. I used to wear those all the time. Sharon Lane, Sergeant Bill, thank you for your service. Well, thank you. Thank you for thanking me. I had a great police career. I really did. I'm glad it's over, but I survived 27 years with the NYPD, and I was in harm's way most of my career, all of my career pretty much. You know, people sometimes would ask you, oh, you were in homicide. How dangerous was that? I go, well, we pulled murderers out of their bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Do you think they came voluntarily? You know, it was dangerous, you know, and we would go to apprehend them. That was the most dangerous part, right? Sherry Ping, Wrangler needs to get his together and get those kids. He was the one who had full custody. You know, Sherry Ping, we don't know if, in fact, Wrangler, who's the son, whether he has anything to do with this. This investigation certainly is not over. And we can find out some things that may surprise us, you know. Gene Hawkins, I will wait to get my news from you. I'm just the facts, ma'am, type and hate sensationalism, drama, and made-up scenarios. JLR drives me nuts. Laugh out loud. Yeah, I saw it, you know. I saw something tonight he did, and on that Boston case, the woman that charged with killing her, Karen Reed. It was pretty disgusting what he was doing, screaming at her, did you kill your cop boyfriend? I mean, dude, the number one rule of a journalist is not to inject yourself into the story. And if you do that, you're not reporting news. You're trying to make news. You're making news. And that, I think that's disgusting, you know. But there are many people like that in this world, you know.
As we learn these things, a lot of times there's some shifting in details. We had a source early on that said it looked like they'd been shot. The two women had been shot outside the car. The medical examiner throws water on all of that.
Yeah, this is something that I've been trying to nail down for the last couple of days. I got a tip about it and was trying to get it confirmed by the medical examiner, and we finally did. The medical examiner in Oklahoma has confirmed that the two victims that you see right there, Veronica and Jillian, were not shot. So they were not shot, no gunshot wounds. This was not a shooting. What the actual cause of death was, we don't know. They're not revealing that yet. But, you know, it's more barbaric than I think that we realized. This could possibly be an explanation. You remember, they didn't positively identify the bodies for a couple of days. It took them a couple of days. And this may be a reason why. It may have really just been a brutal killing, Ashley.
It's so upsetting to, I mean, there's nothing that can make you feel better about this story, but for the fact that you hope that they died quickly and painlessly, and maybe it was a bullet they didn't even see coming. But given these details, that there was a broken hammer found with the glasses behind the vehicle, and that they weren't shot, it just makes you wonder, were they beaten to death? Did they use a hammer? Were they strangled? I mean, it could not, and there were two of them, and apparently potentially five with stun guns, keeping them, you know. It's just an awful, awful series. Last thing real quickly, why was he released? Why was Paul Grice brought in and released and then grabbed again after the other four? It's a big mystery.
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, and we don't know the answer. Again, he was not brought in. He didn't go in on his own the first time. He was brought in almost like he was going to be arrested. They did the interviews, and then they released him. What they've learned between then and now, we don't know. I will say I've been talking to locals on the ground there. Not totally shocked, obviously, by this arrest since he was in the affidavit to begin with, but a lot of sadness because he's got three kids too. And now they've got to sort all of that out. So the whole community is still very much torn apart over all this.
Thank you.
So yeah, I mean, you can't even imagine the horror of this when you think about the families involved in this. We talk about this like it's a news story, you know. And I know from responding and to going to murder scenes and to talking to families of murder victims that this stuff is no joke, you know. It's the real deal, and it's horrific, you know. It's horrific, and you can't appreciate it unless you're at, you know, you see the human drama, and it's hard to see it from a distance. It's hard to report on it from a distance. But I still sometimes get really involved in these cases, even though I'm not boots on the ground at the very location. The other thing was reported by Elizabeth Vargas from News Nation was Paul Grice's involvement in this God's Misfits, these anti-government groups. And we don't know what that had to do, if anything, with these murders. It seems it had to do with put these people together and enabled one of them to seemingly have control over the rest of them. This is Elizabeth Vargas.
In the case of those two murdered mothers who were found in Oklahoma, they were both from Kansas. And any time a suspect in a gruesome killing is arrested, police and journalists start combing the internet to see what their social media footprint might reveal about them. Well, News Nation has obtained a trove of social media posts from one of the suspected killers in this case, Cole Twombly. He's one of five suspects in that anti-government group called God's Misfits, and now he's being charged with the murder of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, along with several others. Joining us now is News Nation correspondent Brian Enten. Brian, you've been going through his social media posts. What have you found?
Yeah, you know, it's been scrubbed with the five suspects, but we have been able to come up with some of these posts from the last couple of years. And some of it is disturbing, not necessarily surprising, since we know that they were part of this group, according to police, called God's Misfits, an anti-government religious group. But when it comes to Cole Twombly in particular, his Facebook posts go back a couple of years, a lot of anti-government posts. There's a lot of posts where he's worried about the government coming in and taking away his guns. He also posts a bit about demons and devils. There were a couple of posts where he put the definitions of what a demon is and what a devil is, which is interesting. He talked in some posts about the God's Misfits meetings, saying that they were meeting in town and encouraging other people to come, which is interesting considering when we were out there, so many people said they hadn't heard of the group, but apparently they did have these public meetings where people were welcome to attend. He also talked about, you know, again, anti-government rhetoric, talking about what he called controlled opposition and becoming ungovernable. He said that he was becoming more and more ungovernable, which is interesting. You know, the fifth suspect who was arrested just last week, his name is Paul Grice. Also, some interesting things we dug up on him, Elizabeth. There was this land use agreement that was filed with the court. And I want to read you part of this because this also goes into the whole anti-government God misfits rhetoric. It said, he wrote, "I repudiate and revoke my citizenship if any ever existed with the legal fiction known as the United States government. I claim my children as my God-given property and subject to none other. Government did not create my children and therefore does not control my children. God created my children in their mother's womb and my sperm and are my creation, my property, and I waive none of my God-given rights or duties in the upbringing of my offspring," which is interesting. Wow. That he wrote that in one of these land documents just kind of shows you what was going through these folks' heads, Elizabeth.
Do we know what this group's aim was? Were they just anti-tax? Were they anti-vaccinations, anti-school, anti, you know, any sort of local ordinance like speeding, you know, speeding laws? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of what God's meant.
I think Paul Grice was a... what's called a sovereign citizen, that these are citizens that go by their own rules, don't abide by the laws of the state, of the country. But that's sort of ridiculous, you know, because there's something called the social contract. And if you live in this country, you live in a state, you live in this case in Oklahoma, you must abide by the laws of that state and the laws of the country. And that's part of the social contract. And if you don't agree with the social contract, then you're not allowed to own a car. You can't travel on the roads. You can't own a home. Of course, part of the social contract is that you must pay taxes. You know, hearing my father say the only thing you have to do is die and pay taxes, I was like, that's such an uplifting thing to say, Dad. Thanks for that advice. When you say, I don't have to do that, the only thing you have to do is die and pay taxes. Well, these sovereign citizens don't think they have to do any of those things, that they're not guided by the laws of our country, the laws of their state, and that's where they're coming from.
Misfit's purpose was...
Good question. I mean, we've talked to people in God's Misfits groups in other parts of the country who say they're not even really fully anti-government. It's more of kind of like a more fun semi-religious group to be in. But it seems like in this part of the country with this group, they were just extremely, extremely anti-government. I heard over and over again that they followed what they called God's laws. So they didn't necessarily believe they had to abide by the government's laws, just that they had to follow, again, what they called God's laws.
All right. You've also gotten some new information this week on how these two mothers may have been murdered. What have you learned?
Yeah, so there was this thought early on that they may have been shot, but we have confirmed, Elizabeth, through the medical examiner that they were not shot. The medical examiner won't give us more details on a specific cause of death, but is saying they were not shot, which, you know, sort of leads you to believe that this was really a barbaric murder based on what we've learned from other sources.
Right,
that
it there must
was a
have
lot
been.
Of blood. Yeah.
Yeah, there was blood all over the car, in the car and all over the ground near the car. So if they weren't shot, it must have been some other grievous sort of wound to their bodies that would cause that much bleeding.
Yeah, and we've heard from a source that there was a hammer found nearby, which, again, it's just awful to think about what these moms may have gone through. But, you know, sort of, I hate to say the hope, but people in the community were hoping that it was quick and painless. And the more we find out, the more we believe that it was a really brutal killing.
All right, very quickly, the fifth suspect you brought up, Paul Grice, will be back in court this week. What are we expecting?
Yeah, I'll be back in Oklahoma this week, Elizabeth. He's going to be arraigned on Wednesday, which if you remember when the other four were arraigned, it was quite a spectacle. The families of the victims came, had to be restrained. It was very, very emotional in court. So we'll be back there this week, Wednesday morning, for the arraignment.
Thanks so much for watching.
So Wednesday morning, this Wednesday, Paul Grice will be arraigned. I'm going to try to cover that live this Wednesday, his arraignment. It always, a lot of people, for whatever reason, want to watch the arraignment. They love to watch people go into court. And it's, you know, it'll be announced what time it will be on Wednesday. Folks, if you're looking for a great attorney in the New York metropolitan area, then Joe Murray is your man. Joe's a retired NYPD member of the service and a fantastic defense attorney. You can reach Joe on his cell at 718-514-3855. Email him at joe@jmurray-law.com or go on his website, jmurray-law.com. Not only is Joe a fantastic defense attorney, but a huge supporter of the Police Off the Cuff podcast. You know, I just was looking at this case, and of all the things going on here, and it's a horrific case. There's no way to slice it. Five people involved, premeditated murder of some young people, and two young mothers. You know, here they are on the screen. Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, and may they rest in peace. And we always, when we report these type of things, we always try to give a shout out to the victims and the victims' families. And Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, there's all different pictures of them. Just a horrific situation. We pray for their families, their friends, their children, we hope they will rest in peace, and we hope that they get justice. And, you know, folks, again, if you're not subscribed to us, go on to YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, hit the like button, share us with your friends and your family, and join our Patreon or join our YouTube channel membership. To support Police Off the Cuff. This is, you saw this, I played this pic. This is my son Jake's wedding, of course, and that was March 2nd. I just wanted to show you another quick picture that you think will be pretty funny. That's me and my two sons on December 24th, 2001. That was after September 11th. I got promoted to Detective Sergeant, and that's, I was so glad we took that picture because, well, again, I wasn't going to take any pictures that day. And as we were leaving, I saw that flag and I said, let's take a picture in front of the flag. And this is sort of one of those iconic family pictures that you're so happy that you have it, you know, and I'm happy that I have that picture. Gina G, what a nice picture. Yeah, I like it. I'm glad that I have that picture. And, Julia Ann, Police Off the Cuff, if you want real truth, no BS, you're at right place. There's a lot of dumb podcasts you'll like if you're a sucker. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for that. Yeah, Heather, that's one episode just ain't enough. Off the cuff. My friend actually wrote and sang that song and played all the instruments on it. And my friend Pete Chiarelli that I grew up with, he wrote that song for me. The Off the Cuff tune, yeah. Then I was going to try to do another Police Off the Cuff theme song, and I asked him, can you write me like a real gritty, real like sort of like ghetto-ish reggae tune, you know, but real nitty. And he wrote this thing. It was so syrupy. I was like, I can't use that. No one will believe that. But, you know, I guess you can't hit it out of the park every time. But, maybe Cheryl Hervey, those pics are making me teary. Beautiful men. Well, thank you so much. You know, that's one of the good things about pictures. You know, you could see how you used to look. And Sherilyn Schaffner, I missed you at Bill Cannon. You're awesome. Thank you, Sherilyn. It's so nice to see you too. Carol Grayston, thank you, Carol, for being a great moderator, being a great subscriber, being a great friend. Hi, guys. Great to see you and all the new faces too. Please remember to press the thumbs up button. It's free to subscribe too. Heather, my pops is a musician on the East Coast. That's great. That's excellent. So, folks, that's basically our show tonight. I wasn't actually even going to do a show. And I was sitting around and I was reading some of this stuff. And here's my headshot from when I was trying to be an actor. But anyway, I was hanging around and I said, you know, let me do a show because I think it could be pretty interesting to talk about some of the things we've learned, and which is in this thumbnail here. Who's cutting a deal? Will the Oklahoma murdered mom's defendants turn on each other? And I think we answered that. I think we know, yeah, they're definitely going to turn on each other. And that's for sure. Mel Stiller, thank you. That's nice, Sherilyn. Mel Stiller, that's a great picture of you, Sergeant Bill. Thank you so much, guys. That's fills my heart to hear that. So, guys, have a great weekend. Friday night, tomorrow is the weekend. Have a great night, and thanks for tuning in. God bless. I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff. One episode, just ain't enough.